Hey everyone. Welcome back to those of you who've been showing up, and hello if this is your first time. We've been giving a prompt every week. So if this is your first time, don't worry about it. Although if you have something to add, please do. So our prompt from last time, and we're curious for your thoughts, feedbacks, ways you worked with it over the course of the week. Or anything else that came up for you about the topics last week. The Heart Sutra, which we chanted several versions of, is about emptiness. Most relationships are about particulars, you and me, for example. So, how are there relationships in the context of emptiness? Oh, got two behind you, Charlie.
I wasn't here last week, so I haven't been mulling it over all week, but I do have something that I was just recently talking to someone about that applying.
Cool. Thanks, Jen.
I was describing, like, I have a lot of professional experience working with autistic kids, and I was describing the way that I relate to autistic kids as like watching them very closely and then watching myself very closely and seeing, like, when I do something that reminds me of something they do, and using that to like connect to their internal unknowable experience. And so, in that sense, like recognizing that there's a sameness between us.
Nice. Thanks.
I also wasn't here last week, but thoughts about this immediately. I think in my practice, in the practice, like we try to be in the moment. And I just noticed that in relationship, in all relationships, if you are able to be present in the moment, there, I mean, whether you're present in the moment or not, there is always a constantly arising situation with interacting with other humans. And it's interesting that Brett Jen brought up autism, as I have autism spectrum disorder. I have an autistic brain, which it works a little slowly in a way. It's like it takes in everything. And I get very overwhelmed, especially with human interaction, like a human face. I'm like paying attention to every tiny little detail, any tiny little expression. It's not, as an autistic person, it's not that you don't notice the emotion or the expression. It's that there's so much coming in constantly that it's like a washout. It's just too overwhelming. So to slow down is wonderful. To be in the present moment is wonderful. It's like a break to be able to pay attention to each tiny, minute detail. The desire to lean in, the desire to pull back. Any situation with other humans is going to be constantly arising emotions, situations, needs, challenges. So I think it's not. How it connects to emptiness is that, the emptiness is not, in my mind, it's not the lack of things. It's just the present, being in the present moment, which is like constantly being full.
Thank you for sharing that. I wasn't here either, but my initial reaction to your prompt was, of course, there is relationship in emptiness. There are so many people that I have relationships with that have died, and my relationship is now, in some ways, with the emptiness. Beautiful, thanks. Done? Looks like it. Okay. On to Colleen. So our topic for tonight is the precepts, which you might have noted that we recited the Kyoji Kaimon instead of Fukan Sasengi tonight in preparation for having a class on the precepts. And so I'm going to take a little bit of time here and talk about the very first part of the precepts, which is the three treasures. I'm going to talk about that for a few minutes. And then we'll hear from Minju. So I'm going to go ahead with that. So since the beginning of Buddhism, a person could become a Buddhist by saying, I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dharma, I take refuge in the Sangha. Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are known, therefore, collectively as the three refuges, the three treasures, the three jewels, or the triple gem. So what does it mean to take refuge? We read about it in as we recited tonight, we read a little bit about taking refuge, and here are some of my thoughts about that as well. We've learned that suffering exists, and we'd like to find a way to relieve suffering. So whether you experience this particular moment as quiet and peaceful, or maybe miserable and full of sorrow, depends on the state of your heart and mind. Threats to our happiness and causes of suffering collectively are the three poisons: greed, anger, and delusion. When we take refuge in the three treasures, we are looking for a way to protect ourselves from those poisons. And some of the experience we have when we're stuck, such as jealousy, dishonesty, stinginess, and separation from others. But we're not asked to accept the teachings of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, with blind faith. The Buddha was very explicit in his instruction to verify these truths for ourselves. So the Buddha asks us to trust our own intuition to know whether a teacher is a true spiritual guide for us, or whether a particular teaching is useful in our practice. So that's sort of my take on taking refuge. Taking refuge in the Buddha is having some faith that Buddhahood is possible, that enlightenment or awakening is available. It isn't necessarily about taking refuge in or believing in a person that lived 2,500 years ago that was a fully awakened being. It's really just about believing that Buddhahood is possible here and now. Taking refuge in the Dharma is taking refuge in the vast ocean of teachings that we have to work with in our practice. We also take refuge in the Dharma of some greater truths, like the truth of interdependence, the benefits of compassion, and the fact that selfishness leads to suffering, even for the one who's being selfish, that our actions have consequences that are visible and invisible, and that there are forces at play in the universe much larger than our own individual wills and concern. Taking refuge in the Sangha means that we trust and rely on this container of practice that we share together. Our practice is enriched and nourished when we share with others. And then I have a poem from the Dhammapada that I found that I thought was a really lovely, brief explanation of taking refuge. They go to many a refuge, to mountains and forests, to park and tree shrines, people threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge, not the supreme refuge. That's not the refuge, having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when, having gone to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for refuge, you see the right enlightenment, the Four Noble Truths, stress, the causes of stress, the transcending of stress, and the Noble Eightfold Path, the way to the stilling of stress, that's the secure refuge. That the supreme refuge, that is the refuge, having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. I thought that was a lovely portrayal of the three refuges. So next up we have Minshu, who's going to talk about his practice with the precepts a bit. He's way in the back, Charlie.
Good evening. I'm going to sit up here so that people can see me a bit better. So my name is Minshu, and I've been asked to talk about the precepts for all of 5 minutes. So I'm going to really cram stuff in. So obviously, I'm just going to touch bases on a few things. We're just going to skim over it. My hope is that this spurs some interest in the subject, and then that you'd come to the series of classes that begin in January, where we obviously study the precepts much more in depthly. If you look on the calendar of the temple, you'll see I think it's the first week in January we start on Wednesdays. Everybody's welcome. Please come. So this is going to be incomplete, but here we go. So I'd like to start with a story, because we like stories. And this story involves me, and we like stories about ourselves. So this is a little story about me. So a few years ago, I arranged a weekend in Portland with two old friends. These were two women that I'd been roommates of mine in San Francisco in like 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And I kept in touch with everybody, and I'd seen them separately in the preceding 25 years, but it was the first time we'd all been together in that long a time. And we had 3 days together. It was lovely. We had a great time and lots of reminiscing. But on the second day, I was struck by how my friends were just like they were when they were 25, but more so. Like, they were like, it was like they'd spent 25 years really concentrating on behaviors and really refining this kind of selfhood, self-dump. And they were really like just concentrated versions of what they were as young people. And so I had there was a little bit of not gloating on my side, but like I was smirking a little bit inside about like, you know, like we're just all ridiculous, aren't we? Look at it, 25 years they've spent doing this. And then a few hours later, I realized they're thinking the same thing about me. I'm exactly the same as I was 25 years ago. So I don't know if that's true. I hope it's not. We didn't talk about it, so I don't know. But my point is that you can choose to practice with the precepts. But if you choose not to, you're going to be still practicing something. And left to our own devices, we're just getting better at being ourselves, whatever that is. We're just like mining down and doing the same thing over and over again. We're going from A to B, A to B, A to B. We're just doing it again and again and again. And we just become more concentrated versions of ourselves, right? But there's another option. Like we can practice with something else. And so if you choose, you can work with the precepts. The precepts are vows of ethical conduct, and in Zen that's a really important. So we have meditation and we have these vows of ethical conduct, and that we need them both. Like on their own, it's not complete. It's beneficial to meditate and it's beneficial to have ethics, but together, that's what we're working toward. That's what we want to do. We want to work with these things together. It's incomplete just to work with one or the other. So,
Minshew,
yeah?
I'm interrupting you.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience of practicing with the precepts?
Well,
are you getting there?
Might be, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sorry, I didn't realize that was the brief. I thought I was giving an over. Well, I think I am going to get to that, though. Yeah. Oh, gee. Okay. All right. Yeah. So, okay. Well, okay. Let me carry on with my notes. So talking about myself, I'm bringing the vows, the precepts into my own life, and I'm working with them. Right. And I'm investigating my behaviors, and I'm seeing what's beneficial, and I'm seeing what's wholesome, and I'm noticing the results of that, right? And then hopefully I can learn to change, or I can learn to carry on doing the same and keep banging my head on that wall and just carry on the same if I wish. But hopefully I'm trying to seek out beneficial behavior. It's hard to work with the precepts. Like, it's not easy. I think you have to understand that the work itself is humbling, and we fail a lot, and that's okay. You know, the failing bits, like a lot of times, like I just don't want to put myself in a position of failure, but this is like good failure, you know, and studying with Sangha. If you come on Wednesdays in January, we can all fail together. And it'll be good for us. Okay, there we go. How's that for the last three?
Thank you.
Thank you. Please come on Wednesday. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to move into an activity to discuss some of the precepts in groups. and someone explain that activity, and then you'll get to choose which group you get to go, you want to go to. So we'll be doing three groups. We'll each group will be talking about three of the precepts, three different precepts. And we've sort of divided them up into what we're calling precepts of body, precepts of speech, and precepts of mind. So you get to choose tonight whether you want to work on and discuss some precepts of body, some precepts of speech, and some precepts of mind. And so we're going to go ahead and move to those groups right now. I am going to be working with a group talking about precepts of body. Reiju is going to be working with a group talking about precepts of speech, and Minshu is going to be working with a group talking about precepts of mind. So I'm going to take a group of people over here to this corner. And Reiju, where would you like to take a group of people? Reiju would like to go to the dining room, and maybe Minshu, you can stay back where you are. So your choices. Body, speech in the dining room, or mind. Please choose a place and go to that place. Thank you.
Okay, so what are the people that we could get? Okay, is everybody inside? Okay, there's the instruction. Well, being me, the dog, well, which one of these dogs in the
crib? Is he trouble, resonate, or otherwise, or you don't understand?
It's trouble, the resonate, and
knowledge. Yeah, yeah.
So, we want to feel solid
about it. I think that's pretty good about it. So, we'll have to come to the class and start
Which one of these helps? I think it's going to be a negative or a positive.
Yeah.
Maybe there's one you don't really fully understand that we could discuss. Which one that I can say is definitely an annoying part of that. It's really good. If you've got a little bit of like, so, anybody's have anything to share?
I thought it was a lot of non-angry person too. I'm really in touch with this person. In fact, was very much in the whole thing.
You mentioned self-righteousness.
Yeah.
Again, I certainly sure. But sorrow, you can experience without being so interested in that thing yourself.
You're getting something out of it. You're feeling the story like something out of it. Yeah.
Only speak for myself. I find it difficult. I'm an immigrant white man living in North America, and I've been part of the Buddhist Zen temple for 20 years. And sometimes I found that people, they know I'm a Buddhist and I go to a Buddhist temple, and they might ask me, directly, but they're looking for validation. Like if they see me as kind of an impressive what is here to learn.
I don't feel comfortable giving that, you know what I mean? And so I think I know what they want to hear, but I can sometimes pull back from giving it for whatever reason. I mean, for a lot of time, I describe myself as a religious person. I would like to just sort of feel like I don't want to be dependent for it. The fact that that kind of holy of a bell kind of preaching kind of religiosity really takes me off like a blanket. So for me, it's not set like it's all the time pulling back. It might be helpful for somebody, not me, but not giving it is where I see that.
Another thing for that. Slightly different. I have a really about cat.
I also get the being mean with wealth. I mean, we live in a city of need. Well, I often have difficulty walking past people in need. Like, I now feel quite wealthy.
More than the body is like, oh,
relatively.
I think dwelling and I was like inserting, indulging, like, you know, that kind of skin on the story. What about, so is there anything else here that gives anybody trouble or resonates in a different way? I think we've got a few more minutes of this section, then we'll move on to it.
It has like a positive
self-esteem.
Do not want to create wisdom problem. So it has like a Yeah. Oh, sure. Let's see. Let's have a look what happens. Well, do not have a jacket. Cultivate.
Is an antonym to equanimity because it's not like it can be like fully quantum.
Oh, yeah.
So like I don't think that study set is kind of on top of that precept. Not exactly. And like the and then I didn't let it out. So, but like, it feels good to
quite overwhelming to feel like if you're in soul with that kind of, it's really like a red hot. Like, really. I say that was the right thing, but sometimes it can feel overwhelming to connect with that, you know? It's kind of like, it's not going to overwhelm me, you know what I mean?
Restricting feels like
it's not like a dead thing, it's active. We're actually working with it all the time, yeah. And what's right today might not be the right way to do it tomorrow. It's fine, yeah. I think I'm not sure if we got the end of this, but we'll find out. Okay. Are we all going back together now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, guys. Circle it. Oh, we're all standing. Hi.
Yeah, I said it's standing in a circle.
Oh, we're standing in a circle. So we have a few minutes for each group to sort of give a little expression of what they talked about in their groups. And maybe you have a spokesperson and maybe there's a couple spokespeople. So Lindsay is the spokesperson for our group, so I'm just going to pass the next to me. Thank you. Yeah, okay. Beach, what were you? No, so our precepts were, do not speak dishonestly, do not praise self while blaming others, and do not defame the three treasures. And, you know, I think we talked about all the murky ways speech can come up, and the ways we get stuck. I'm just thinking sorry, spokesperson was thrown on me. It's okay. No, it's okay. Yeah, honestly, my mind is fully drawing a blank right now. I'm speaking honestly. Thank you, Doctor. Yeah.
Just to add, I think we came to the nuance of just how gray, like we talked about lying a lot, but just how gray it can get, you know, what constitutes a lie is somebody mentioned, you know, saying it's nice to meet you and you're not having a nice day. Is that a lie? Or, you know, lying to save somebody else. So it's really just neat exploring all those gray areas. That's tough. Like, I feel like it seems obvious, but there's a lot of depth to it. It's tough to get to.
Oh, we don't. The facilitator really doing a very poor job.
We are the easy subject.
We were the easy group.
Obviously, anybody else from the group is very welcome to say anything. So I think anger was the one that got the most input in our group. We were dealing with how you deal with anger and different types of anger. That was the one precept that really stuck out for people. I was saddened to find out that really I was the only person that really dwelt on past mistakes, that nobody else. I really felt like I was going to get some camaraderie and nobody really had anything to add to that, which is unfortunate. And not being mean with Dharma as well. Yeah, we had a little to say about that. But anger was the, you know, was the red hot one, I think. You know, it's the most recognizable. It's the one that we deal with even... many of us admitted, we come across as not angry people, but there's still anger in their lives, you know? But yeah. Would anybody else like to say anything while I agree? You don't have to, but yeah.
I would say kind of like what you said, there was a lot of discussion of the nuance of like, what is it to indulge anger or versus like suppressing anger and how that's not helpful and how like there is a way to experience it that seems to help it move on and just to be like more of a wholesome experience is not suppressing it. So there was a lot of discussion of that, like nuance and when does it become indulging and unhealthy.
Any last thoughts from
mine? Hello. I guess I'll start. Ours were do not kill, do not steal, do not become intoxicated. We very conspicuously left out do not misuse sexuality. That was contentious. There is conspicuously absent. And I'd say we probably spent the most time on do not kill. And it was interesting what that brought up some folks. For some, it was a put off to like even studying Buddhism. It's just like this, it seems hypocritical or like impossible. For another person, it was like, yeah, this is an entryway point. So like, I can see how it applies to a lot of different points of practice. It has been very fruitful. And I think that's kind of something I was noticing is that across the group, it's really possible and easy to like find layers to all these precepts. Like there's the immediate thing, like do not kill. Oh, do not kill another person. Easy, done. But then like there you can
find other ways in which it applies to like everyday life, as far as feeling someone's enthusiasm for practice, perhaps, or like considering how we engage with animals and ones that were like our pets. So I'd say that's what was sticking out to me in our group as far as how we engage with these. Does anyone want to add to that? I guess not. I think.
So I thought it was, I really like the line in there that's like, don't create a veneer of attachment. I think it brings up like the precepts are like, as we've been discussing, so much deeper than just the tagline, right? And that once you dive into it, that it's really so much more about a practice towards and about like noticing and being present and making effort in the direction of something rather than like the achievement of like perfection. We also discussed how the other ones, like they could feel a lot like do or do not, like very like black and white. I was saying how in some of them, like the don't become intoxicated or the not misusing sexuality, they're more like nuanced. And so it kind of lends itself more towards that, a practice towards something, rather than this feeling of like stressing out, like I must not kill anything ever, but like giving yourself a break that we're human and that these things happen. And so it's more about being present and working with the precepts rather than thinking that they're like imposed on us or something.
Okay, thanks for sharing.
Yes. All right. So every year we spend a couple months on like drilling into this topic. So first couple, well, January and February coming up, we'll have a series of 8 classes on Wednesday nights on this. That culminates in a retreat, a week-long session that is themed around precepts. And it's also an opportunity for people to take the precepts. I'm talking about it because I'll be giving the precepts this year. It's a pretty important transition in Buddhism. And so consider it. If you see people wearing that, then they've taken the precepts in past years. Or that, yes, true. This year, every 3 years, we do Daidukai, which is kind of like a fancier version of Jukai. It just means that we're doing more ceremonies, and it's a like there's a lot embedded in those ceremonies in terms of how we approach this. And so if you have taken the precepts in the last couple of years but not been through the whole Daijukai experience, maybe consider it. And if you're on the fence about taking the precepts, like this is a good year to do it. And I think in terms of like the class series, it's like, I think, you know, you got a sense that like, this is pretty nuanced, rich material. Life is really complex, and these aren't like 16 rules for how to do it, right and wrong. It's a lot more convoluted than that. And really what we're trying to do is to train our capacity to like notice carefully, right? To be able to perceive ethically and have sound decision making around that. And that kind of allowing ourselves to get really interested in like, how is this playing out? Who am I in relation to this? That kind of fine tuning is what makes it interesting. So doing that
in a group and getting to see other people kind of wrestling with the same questions, like, just makes it a lot more alive. It's a fun series. That's what I got.
All right. So wrapping up tonight, I'm going to give you, and if you got a handout, it's on the handout, and there are some handouts out there. First of all, I'll do that first so I don't forget. There are precept study guides out there in a box. Are you going to use them in the class? Okay. They're so interesting reading. They're useful reading. They were composed from talks that Keoghan gave on the precepts. So they're out there in a box, and they're available for Donna. So if you're interested in one of those, please avail yourself. So the prompt for next week, which precept or precepts helped you most in your interpersonal relationships, including your own relationship with body, speech, and mind? So that's your prompt to think about next, and come back next week, and we'll have a little share at the beginning of the class. And now we will get ready for Vespers. Thank you.